You're listening to the Kennel Confidential Podcast, brought to you by the United Tree and Forest Association. I'm your host, Davin Ramage.
I'm your co-host, Chad Wagner.
Let's get into the episode. Here we go. Welcome back to the Kennel Confidential Podcast. We have got a guest tonight that has been on the back burner, but Chad and I both have been anticipating getting Mr. Landrum on the phone. So on tonight's episode, we are going to talk to Mr. Keith Landrum about the one and only Landrum's Taz. Well, Mr. Landrum, before we get too deep into the dogs and talking about Taz, tell us a little bit about who you are.
I'm Keith Landrum. I live in Ovette, Mississippi. Been here all my life. Same place. Born here on this place and still live on it. Welded my whole life, 47 years, oil field welder. And I just flew with dogs and had dogs early. Growing up, we had squirrel dogs and had walker dogs. We had a little bit of everything back then, coon, squirrel hunting, whatever. We just raised on this place, raised what we eat. And mostly and growing up and just was all here and a lot of ground we could cover, and do a lot of things and enjoy life in the country. I'm a country boy from beginning to end.
You don't plan on changing anything?
No, sir. Nothing I know of. I really enjoy everything I do and still do a lot of things on this place here.
Well, as mentioned, LT Taz, Landrum's Taz, is the dog that we are coming after you on, the hot topic here. So where can we get started? Where'd you get him? Who bred him? How was he bred? That sort of thing.
Okay, he was a sport bred dog. Got a Tom Bigby Taz, which Randy Walters owned, and Bill Young had a Sandy dog. And they bred him. And come out of the first litter, and he was a nice young pup, and I'd watched him bail food with him. So we had a discussion, and I told him that I would like to take him and work him and see what I could do with him. So I got him from Bill, and the reason I did is things I seen with him. We hunted a couple of times together, and he had a special ability, which is a winning ability for him, but he was really exceptionally good. That's what caught my eye, among other things. Me and him started from there, and he was about 14 months old. We had a good run. He was a good tree dog and just a good dog. He was sort of a hot-nosed dog. But he had the winning ability that he can win a squirrel 20 feet in a tree. And that was that's what carried him through his whole time. We started out, I guess, in Michigan in 07, September. I placed him second in the first hunt I put him in. And then,
was that ATFA?
That was ATFA, yes, sir. We hunted in some more stuff I did, but I started in Michigan then, and then I placed him in Missouri in October 07 for the first place in ATFA, and then I placed him fifth in Florence, Alabama. That was 10/20/07, and then Sprott, Alabama, placed him fourth in 11/3/07. Placed him in Dexter, Georgia, in High Point Dog in the PM hunt. Placed him in third in Dexter in the morning in 08. In Cedar Crossing, I placed him fifth, February of 08. And then placed him fifth in LBL. That's 3/08. I was still working, had to work some, a lot. So I went Dexter, Georgia. I placed him sixth in 09, was AM High Point winner at LBL in 3/14/09. Placed second in the LBL rally hunt, same place in 3/14/09. And I won the Arkansas regional first place in 12/09. that finished him in ATFA. And then I hunted in a championship hunt, Dexter, Georgia, won first place, 123.10. And I went to Cedar Crossing and placed in first in 2.610. Went to Montrose, Mississippi and placed in first in 2.2010. And then that made him a squirrel champion. And at that point, he was ATFA Sports Nick Dog of the Year. He made Grand Squirrel Champion at Montrose when he made Grand Squirrel. And so I hunted him in some NKC hunts. Hunted him in quite a few, but I won the Mississippi State hunt at Knoxville. He was AM first place dog, 1.210. And he was first place PM dog, 1.210. I made him a squirrel champion. And then he was the NKC Squirrel Champion Magnolia Coon and Squirrel Hunting Club. That's where we done our NKC hunting. And then he won the state championship, Mississippi State hunt in Knoxville County again, was first in AM hunt and the first in PM hunt. And at that time, when I finished in the Grand Squirrel in NKC, I retired him, because I had some dogs off of him that was coming along, and he had served well, and so I just had some things I wanted to see that I could do with him, and hoped that he would do what I had in mind, and that was be a reproducer, because he had some real, real great qualities, and then I started that venture. It worked out well with a lot of help from other breeders and men and women that had dogs that I crossed. I'm an outcross fanatic. I really like to see what I can produce into what I have and produce into what they have. And they were about four real good selections that I run across that really worked well. And that's what made him, to me, a real good dog to me. You know, he pleased me, and I done it because I wanted to see what I could do. And with the help of other people, I was able to accomplish that. It's been a good run, and I can tell you what he done well with. And The first good cross that we made was a dog made named Brown Sugar. She was she's off of Jerry's JH and Lassiter's, Billy Lassiter, maybe early bird dog. And we got some females out of that were really good. We got a Landrum's Sug out of it. I mean, Landrum Sugar out of it. And then we got a Pine Belt Sug out of it. And Carlton Walker was the owner of Brown Sugar. And both of those dogs made ATFA Grand Squirrel Champions. And they made back-to-back ATFA Dog of the Years. That worked well. And Carlton and I made another breeding or two, and some of those worked out well. And then I run into some boys from Kentucky, Wallace boys, and they had three females, which was off of the same litter, and they was off the Legends dog and the Doe dog. So we bred those, and all three of those dogs made, they was Grand Squirrel Champions, and all three litter mate sisters, and produced some exceptionally good dogs out of that, with that cross, with a lot of good characteristics between those females and him. And I finished the last one. Well, I got really out of the fancy dog was my ghost dog. I finished him last and that, and we run that, I guess, in 2011, till just lately. And I found some more females, that, and one of them was Mike Powell's out of Georgia. He had a female named BB, and she bred her to LT and made some good pups out of that. Then Thunder and Flash was a couple of them, and then overall they turned out pretty good, and represented both of us well. Just had a good run for a long time, and I never have, I guess, advertised on anything, or I don't do Facebook and don't do all that. I just sort of just hang in here where I'm at and try to let the dogs that I flew with, you know, represent themselves. Been at it, I guess, in this manner since about 96, but it's something that we need to keep, and the young people that can need to through with it. And I know the kids don't have time for it anymore, but you know, you hope they will come back and enjoy it, because it's a lot of fun. The survival of it will be participation in it, and trying to keep the participation up, you know, in today's times is pretty tough.
I agree with that.
The hardest thing to do, and I noticed, you know, you were talking about Taz and back in 07, and well, all these associations are, you know, down in numbers, but I believe I'm right. Back then, ATFA was kind of cutting off 50 dogs, weren't they? At most every hunt, they were filling up.
Oh, yeah, we had about 74 at one hunt at Sprott, Alabama.
Wow.
And about, it was 1999 maybe, or 2000, you know, and that was a milestone in the very height of it then, you know. And I know we had a lot of other NKC that was doing good, and had some UKC, Owen Brayson had the UKC. I hunted in it some. He sort of got busy with other things, but he's trying to revive it, you know, and that's a real good deal. Maybe participation can be brought back.
Yeah, I would love to see an organization have to cut it off at 50 dogs. That that's a hunt I want to go to. That's pretty cool.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We, you know, in our number, we cut it from that, and then had to cut it to 30 because timber was being cut so heavily, and it's just steadily got worse on that. You know, I used to walk out my backyard at 2,500 acres, but was hit back here, never been cut till 2000. And when they cut it, they cut it off.
So, well, and to take you back through that resume you read off there on Taz, majority of that, I assume, it sounded like you did the heaviest portion of your competition in the ATFA.
I did.
I'm curious to come check out an ATFA event. We've talked to Todd on the podcast and Owen. We've had an episode with Owen, and I finally got to meet Owen at the UKC Puppy Derby about a month ago.
Okay.
And I've talked to, I guess, probably one or two other ATFA people just on the phone, or, you know, questions on the podcast page or something like that. But all seem like great people, and I'm looking forward to checking out a hunt. But it looked like 2007 to 2009 there was a good run for Taz, just kind of off of what you were reading.
It was.
Firsts and fifths and fourths and all at a time when you're cutting it off at 50 dogs, that's doing pretty good. How old was he at that time, that 2007 to 2009? How old of a dog was he?
He was born in September of 2005, so he is 2, 3, and 4 year old.
Prime years there.
Yeah, and then he, hunted his 5. He was in his prime. He started out a little raw, but he was able to put it all together. I hunted him to 2012. And grand squirreled him out in 12-08 to 12. I grand squirreled him, and that's when I quit hunting. ATFA, you have to put them up after 2 wins. in a 100 points you threw. This turns into, it turned into a breeding. What I've seen, it turned into a breeding program if you were going to run it, if you was going to chase it. And that's what I sort of got into, to see if I could, you know, have dogs that come from my kennels that I, pups that I sold, that maybe I could get back or something other at a later time.
Well, that, paint us a picture of Taz. What did Taz look like? Was he a tall dog, leggy dog?
No, he was 16, about 16 and a half inches. He was reddish orange.
That's the right color.
Yep, he was real muscular. But when he was in his prime, I had some government woods out here that I'd run him. They was 5 miles of it, and by the time I started him in August, I'd run him every other day a little bit, start off about a mile, raise it on up to 2 miles. Right on, by October 1st, I would have him to where he could run 5 miles all over 17 mile an hour. And when he was in shape, when I carried him to hunt, he was in shape. He had a lot of stamina. He was hardy, held up well. He lived to be 15 year old. Lost him on November the 4th of 20. And I got a puppy out here off of him 6 months before we died.
And, good timing.
It was, yeah.
What was his style when you cut him loose in the woods? Was he running out 300 yards from you, or did he hunt and passes close to you, circle you? How'd he look in the woods?
He was 250 to 350. He was a sweep dog, about like a windshield wiper. He covered the ground well. He didn't pass up much. Like I said, he didn't have much of a cold nose, but he, if it was hot, he done well. If it was laid up in a tree, he would just spin around and tree, just stop and tree. That was his style, and he was consistent. He was pretty consistent on what he did every time out. You could sort of count on what was going to happen, you know, in the conditions. And really, a little bit the harder the conditions and them not stirring, he done better. And
that's a pretty valuable characteristic in the competition world.
It is. Like I said, that goes back to the winding ability, you know, whenever they just come out, cut nuts out of the den, January and February, he done real well. And he done, you know, good all around. So he's down, he done good. But, you know, but when it got a little bit hard, he done best work, I thought. And that was one thing that carried him, you know, through his lifetime. And then, like I said, he carried it on into through his breeding. Still see a lot of it off of grand pups and pups.
Now, when we look back at Taz's breeding, old Tom Bigby Taz and Pine Belt Sandy, and that goes back the sport dog. And I don't know if you know the answer, and I haven't got a real clear answer on it. Was the sport dog, was that a Baldwin dog, do you know?
I don't know if it had Baldwin in it or not. I really, I'll tell you what it done. Let me read this here. It come out of Tom Bigby Taz's granddaddy was Smith's E&N Buck and Smith's Dixie. And that's made Smith's Sport. And then Spuds McKenzie and Coxwell Crickets was Gingo's Cricket. And that was made Tom Bigby Taz. Let's go down here on Sandy, because she's a sport bred. I started Stump Jumping Rusty and Stump Jumping Shelby. That was Rusty, daddy, and Shelby was her mother. And then Rusty went back to Tanner and Sandy. Stump Jumping Shelby went back to Oakdale Sport Model and Oakdale Robin. And I don't have it any further than that. They was, everywhere it come from, by the time they got the LT, it was quite a bit of sport in it, you know.
Well, I might be able to guess the answer to this next question, but what was your favorite cross out of LT?
Oh, goodness. I guess my favorite cross out of LT, Well, I'm gonna have to say it was the best male that I had to come out was the Bodog. And the Bodog come out of Bingo, which Bingo came out of Boggs Creek Turbo in Wallace's Kentucky Megan.
I would have guessed Boggs Creek. That's what I would have guessed, as something with Boggs Creek.
Yeah, it did. I'm going to tell you, the Boggs Creek, going back to all of it, with Turbo and Legends, you know, with those females they had, and then what come out of that, I'm talking about, put some pretty nice stuff on the ground. Out of the Mississippi Mafia, Penny Dog, and the Fancy Dog, and the Ginger Dog. So, and that all went back to Legends and Doe.
The reason I would have kind of guessed that is because I look at my Bodog, which my Bodog, his mother, was a full sister to LT.
Yeah.
And, of course, bred her to Junior, which goes back to a lot of Boggs Creek. So, that's kind of why, because I know those two are crossing good together.
Yeah. Yeah, that cross. You throw you in that circle right there, it does well, you know. And I picked up a couple of females that come off to some of it and went back to some outcross. They really produce well. Really produce well with grand pups is what they produce them well with. Like I said, I picked up a couple of little dogs this year, and I'm going to see how they work out.
I couldn't find it, but did you ever make Breeder of the Year?
Yeah, 3 years.
I was going to say, I got that on my note here now. He was being a little modest. He ran it from 2016 to 2019.
Oh, 3 years straight.
Yeah. He was leaving that one out on us.
Well, you know, we done good in the height of it, you know, some of the height of it that was going on pretty good. It's sold my buddy some dogs. Me and him ended up getting in a race for the Dog of the Year, Walter and Arlen Phillip, and they had got a lot of their stuff here, most of it, and so we got in a run. At the end of the year, I had 475 points, and he had 425 points. He liked to beat me with my own stuff. But like I said, how do you lose at that, you know? And we was chasing each other for the last three hunts, so I left to be competitive, not just on seeing what I can raise and produce and seeing what they do for other people that, you know, that can take them and see what they can do with them. And that's been an enjoyment for me. I'm 77 year old, so when I still made four hunts at LBL, enjoyed that hunt. I mean, we've had some good hunts. You get to where things start wearing out, you start having them fixed, and sometimes they don't work as good as you'd like them to, you know.
Well, I've hunted with you a couple of times now, and you do like to compete, but it's my kind of competing. You go out and you compete, you try to win, and you get back to the clubhouse, and you sit down and drink a cup of coffee or have lunch together. That's the way I like doing things.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's just a game. It's not nothing, you know. I mean, it's a game, and you try to play it the best you can. The dog can, and every what the dog does, he does. And if he don't do it, he just don't do it, you know. But there'll be another day, you know. There'll be another day, so.
Well, and I think we all enjoy pleasure hunting our dogs as well, and I know the ATFA's got plenty of guys over there that probably like pleasure hunting more than they like the competition side of it, but I'm kind of torn on what I'm learning about you. So are you more competition driven, or do you enjoy the pleasure hunting just as much or more?
Oh, I enjoy the pleasure hunting just as much or more. You know, it's just, I do it equal now. I used to, you know how you do when you work, you may hunt a dog this weekend, you may have to work 2 weekends, you may not go to hunts, you know, or whatever, or go hunting, you know. And a working man has a time, but when I retired, I started doing a lot of hunting and a lot of competition hunting, you know. I love them both. I love it.
I look forward to the same thing. I hope the sport hangs on so I can retire and just competition hunt. Maybe I can get all my traveling in then.
Well, I know it's fun, but I love to try to finish a dog. It's what I love to do, and seeing what I can get out of him to the best he can be, ever what it will be. Like to watch a pup and see how he acts, you know, when he's born and how he acts when he's 2 weeks old. And then 5, 6, 7 weeks, you start picking out little things that they do that they don't know why they're doing them. And then that's the ones I sort of pick out and try to fool with. It can turn into a job if you don't watch it, because it gets the drive in you, and it can drive you pretty much into wanting to fool with them all the time, and you can't. You got other things you have to do. But
work gets in my way all the time. If I could find a way to not work, I'd have all the time I needed for a squirrel dog.
Well, you got to work. Pay my social security check.
Well, I don't know.
And one bad thing about it is when it puts that drive in you, if you're not real careful, it'll drive you right in the ground, too.
I know. It will. You're exactly right. It will.
Well, and you've hit on your breeding a little bit. And, you know, we've covered the breeder of the year. So I assume by you being an Outcross fanatic and having the dog of the year success with Taz, and that come before your breeder of the year. So Taz leading you into, I guess he's your foundation of your kennel. And you've mentioned a couple other dogs, Ghost and Fancy. Is that what you said? Are they both yours?
Fancy was a wild ghost. Ghost was, you know, he was mine, and, Sugar was mine, and Bo, and had one named Jewel. Seven or eight of them that was that really performed well and done well. You know, made world champions and grand squirrel champions. And Sugar Dog was a real good dog. Like I said, she is dog of the year. She won placed in nine out of 11 hunts in the ATFA. I was very pleased with that year.
Are you still hunting any of them now?
No, I am not hunting any of those now. They sort of passed on. Got some younger dog. I'm hunting a male off of Bo. He's pretty nice dog. He don't have quite the winning ability I got, but he's got the drive. So he's
what's
okay.
His name?
Labrador. I call him Labrador. He loves a water hose. You can't wash your pen out of it. You don't try to eat the water hose. Eat the water up, out of the water hose.
The name is fitting, I guess.
Yeah, that's what got it for him. Yep. Got one that's a couple of them hunting that's out of the group, but they done getting old, most of them.
Well, and we hit on that breeder of the year a little bit on Todd Cole's episode, and that's something that's a little foreign to me. Like I said, I hadn't joined the ATFA or made a ATFA hunt yet. I've not been at this near as long as you have.
Yeah.
But it's my understanding to do that, you really got to get other people hunting your line, right?
You got to gather up points, and, you know, and what you do, but, you know, the female that I raise here, and raise puppies off of here, her. I sell her, and somebody else gets her, then everything that they raise off her, it goes to their credit, not mine, because she will go to my credit. That's the way me and the Walters boy gang, I sold them some female pups, and then they bred them, you know, back to down the line a little bit, something that come from here too, and then we're heads up, but that was there because they own the females.
So there's still Taz dogs out there running ATFA now?
Yeah, they some grand pups and pups, you know, quite a few grand pups. In fact, a lot of mixture in a lot of it, because I bred with Henry Melson out of Tennessee, and a lot of his blood in a lot of things. I think at one time the boy kept up with it. I didn't keep up with it, but UKC, NKC, and ATFA, they was like 62 or 63 dogs that had come off of him was champions or grand squirrel champions.
Another thing I was wanting to ask you, so you started in 1996, and, you know, we know that you've had plenty of success in the Feist dogs, but just out of curiosity, did you, when you, you said you grew up behind Walker dogs, did you do any competition hunting or anything in those days?
I done some coon hunting back whenever I was in my 20s and I guess early 30s. And then after that, it got to where I went to work and I had to, my on call 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. And I just, I got away from it a little bit. We had cows and we had all that and something to do here all the time. And I just, once I done that, I had to shut down a little bit. We had some park collies and the first thing, but I tell you how I got started back into this was through my nephew, Eric Adams. He had a River Run dog named Eli Smokey that come from Jerry Arrington and Mike Durham. And he got tied in with them somehow or another up in Tennessee somewhere or another. And then I got one from him and called him Pepper, best squirrel dog I ever seen. I carried him to a hunt in Sprott, Alabama, and draw out with Gary Hill and Billy Laster, and I got, they beat me up a little bit. He would not hunt with another dog, and I didn't know that, you know, I didn't know about really that part of the squirrel dog competition, but he wouldn't hunt with them. And, boy, it hurt my feelings. I left there that night, come home, brought him and went to the swamps, kill a limit with him. I said, I don't know what's wrong with him. I don't understand that. But he wouldn't hunt with another dog, you know, and I never did. That's when I first realized that everything don't make a competition dog, you know. But that was a learning experience right there. That was another little episode. Quite a few little episodes in there, but that was my first.
These face dogs can be a little bit different animal, can't they?
They have got their own. They have got their own dispositions. They ain't none of them the same. They can be quirky. They can have quirks, you know.
Well, and you had mentioned checking out a litter and picking out the ones that start doing things and they don't know why they're doing them, being the ones you like. So once you pick that dog out, what's your process, if you're willing to share your secret sauce? What's your process on starting a pup? Do you just take them to the woods and let them figure it out? Do you like drags?
I fool with a hang up a little bit. And I tell you what I like to watch in pups. I put them in a firing pen and got a firing box, and I come to feed them. I take that food and I put it on top of that firing box, and then I got a 5 foot by 4 foot run out front of it, and then pups are out there. And the one that can smell that food up on top of that box, and they can do it if they can smell up. They'll smell that food, and every day that you can bring it, put it up there, and the one that starts doing that first, consistent with it, that's the one I put my own most of the time. Of course, that don't always, you know, turn out the best at the end, but that's a start. And then I get them started, and I got try to keep a few squirrels around my yard down there, my dog yard, and I'll chain them out, and when they get about 4 months old, and let them see them squirrels, and then they start treeing off that chain. I got a little training pen I put them in, and then I go from that, from the chain to the training pen. But I don't put them in the training pen. They get about 10 months old, and I take them on and off that chain. If they really get to treeing a little bit at five, six months old, I'll take them off and put them back in the pen where they can't see out too well, and that way I'll get them leash broke and everything else on that chain. So that chain will get them leash broke, get them where you can walk them and handle them and everything. So it does quite a few things for you if you do that. And then, like I said, I put them in the training pens and about 9-10 months old. Then I leave them in for about 2 weeks. They don't do nothing. I take them out and I rotate them out till they start and get used to little wood and little wood smart and all that in it too. So it works. Because I don't really have the patience to start walking a puppy 7-8 months old and waiting for him to get get started. I want to see something, you know.
See there, Chad, it's not just me.
I was going to say, there's somebody he's talking to that knows exactly what he's talking about. Davin doesn't have much patience either, Mr. Keith.
I like to see it start happening.
You don't never know when it's going to happen. It can happen at 9 months. It can happen. Some of my dogs won't even start till they 15 months. I mean, but when they start, if they exposed to it, it's all in their head. And when they get started, it's all going to come together real, real fast.
That's what happened with my little female. She was the first one I had. He was between a year and a year and a half when it really came on, which he was, you know, born. He was a later in the year litter. And the one I've got now was a spring litter, and she's about to be one, like I said, but she really come on, I would say, right around 9 months, 10 months, somewhere in there.
Yeah. Well, you know, if you start walking at 6 and it's 9 before they get started, you got a lot of walking to do.
Yeah, and I did a lot of that. It sounds like you travel, you know, you said you started Taz in Michigan, and then you went on to Missouri and Alabama, so you've hunted quite a bit of different terrain. And I'm just assuming in Mississippi, you probably start your dogs on flat ground. Is that right?
Yeah, it's flat. It's flat.
So when you start your traveling, do you see a big adjustment period or any kind of effect on taking them into mountainous terrain or hills?
No, sir, I don't. They adapt. They've adapted very, very well everywhere I've been. You know. So they in sloughs, hen, you know, it's just it's wet and bad. They get up there, I guess, get up there in that dry ground, and they never have seen much difference in their production with their hunting, especially as they get about 3 year old. They seem to be can adapt pretty good, you know. They, of course, they're nothing like home ground, but still and all, the dog's got to be able to be hauled. He got to be able to stay in a truck for 12-15 hours, pull him out and carry him to the woods and him perform when you're traveling. And that was a deal about the ATFA that I sort of liked, was the hauling, you know, the different things that a dog had to do to get out of his comfort zone.
Right.
To get into other situations, you know, of staying cramped up in that dog box. I don't see how they do it, but let them out. And when you let them out, they go just as, like, you know, like say fresh and ready to go. And it don't bother them a lot. Once you do it a few times, once they get over the puking in the box and all that other stuff they do in the box that you have to clean up. But they get to where it don't bother them too much.
One question I kind of like to ask the guests that we have on, just with their experience, and especially guests that have been doing it as long as you, and being a breeder yourself, have you seen the dogs? Do you think the competition is improving the breed? Or
yes, because when you start traveling, you start seeing other dogs, you start seeing other breeders that you would never see, and you start. I'm a believer of genetics all the way, and I like to follow genetics. I like to see what something catches my eye. Let's check back on the pedigrees and see how many generations they have been doing as well as what I see. And genetics is what it's all about to me. And I'm not no authority on genetics. I'm just saying what I see is like 3 or 4 dogs. You catch 3 or 4 dogs out of 1 litter that's real good, and then you catch 2 or 3 dogs out of the next litter that's good. that catches my eye. And that's what I always wanted to look at, to see what I needed part of the brain to me, to help, to see what I could do to improve what I had. I'm the unkennel blindest guy you ever seen in your life, I can assure you. I'm not kennel blind. And like I said, it's a lot of folks out there got a lot of good things. And if I seen something that was better than what I had, don't think I wouldn't jump on it. I didn't deny it. Don't deny what you see. They say, you know, if it's good, don't deny it. Better be looking at it twice. And I did. So I just think the dogs are better now, especially in the middle from 15 to 2000. There were some horses out there. I'm just telling you, you had your work cut out for you when you went. And as the numbers just fell off, also has your breeding fell off. Times have changed, but I'm gonna say they still some real stiff competition, and they will be, I think, for as long as folks continue to pursue the best of the best. That's not always true in breeding, but I'm trying to chase the best things you can chase to make a better dog.
Do you see a difference in starting females and starting males?
Females start a little better most times. Most times females are a little easier to start to me than the males. Not a big percentage more, but they are a slight percentage more of what I've seen in my time. Call a male, you know, he's a male, and he's going to chase this thing a male do that distracts him that don't distract the female. Preferably, I like to hunt males because you can hunt them. If you're trying to do something with them to achieve something, you can make the whole year with them. And a female, at the right time, can put you out for 6 weeks. Like I said, there are no secrets to all this we're trying to do. You just try to do the best you can do and try to keep the ball rolling.
Well, before Chad's going to try to get you to tell on somebody. Story, he always likes to try to get a funny story out of people, and I know, he may not admit it, but I'm going to admit it for him. He likes when you tell on somebody. But before we get there, I just kind of want to bring us back around to Taz, and you know, I fell in a rabbit hole there and kind of feel like I led us away from him some, but what would be your favorite Taz story, whether it was a competition or a pleasure hunt or off game or whatever? What would be your favorite Taz story?
Well, I guess the one that cost me just about to kill him when I got him, he was a deer running machine. I'm just going to tell you. He would run a deer to beat all you ever seen in your life. He crossed a deer, he would run it. So I was hunting with a buddy of mine that I got him from, and we was hunting over around Fort Gibson, and he come up missing, and he didn't move. I said to myself, I know what he'd done, because I done caught him at it one time before. If he ever crossed a dead deer, he would lay down, and he would get him a deer bone, and he would chew that deer bone. Well, we had them old cracker-type units, you know, that done the beeping with the antenna on. So I went to fall trying to find him with that thing. And so he was way off. I just kept going. And he had run that deer, I guess, run across that dead deer. That thing got beeping real loud, and I got closer and closer. There was a little couple of pines there. There was just some little bushes around it. And so I walk around there, and he's laying down there, gnawing on a bone. And so I call him, and he don't look. He won't look at me. And I was mad. And, you know, I was really mad. And so I said, let's go. He wouldn't look at me. So I got him. I led him on. So I carried him back, got back to him finally. Folks, I turned him loose. I said, I'm going to tell you better get ahead of me. I was hunting with a guy that I'd bought him from. And that's one reason I got him, because he's running bigger. And I told him, I said, let's go. He got off out there, started going the other way, and I put that little shocking collar on him a little bit, you know. He laid down. I told him, you better get up. Let's go. So I shocked him a little bit more. My old buddy told me, said, hey, you can't do that no more. I said, well, what we gonna do? He said, I tell you what. He said, I'm going to the credit union in the morning, get your money back. I said, oh, no, you not either. I said, I'm going to enjoy this. I'm fixing to break him with this. You hear me? He is fixing to quit this. And that was the worst embarrassment I ever had with him, I guess, right there. But he was young, just hadn't had him long. But that was it. That was the worst. That was one of the worst things I got into it with him about. And another, you better catch him up on that last street when it got late, because I'm telling you, he would get gone on you again. And he would go till he tried to find a squirrel in that dark. You know how that goes sometimes. Yeah. The time he was as good as he could be.
But you got him broke, and then you had loads of success with him.
Yeah.
Good thing you didn't take your money back.
I wouldn't let him. I'm going to try to make something out of him, and he did. He done well. I was proud of him, and, you know, and like everybody else, he's got one they're proud of.
Well, my favorite part, like Davin said, is trying to get a funny story out of you.
Yeah.
It can be about yourself, or it could be about Bill.
I don't know.
But Bill, we like stories about Bill.
Do you like stories about Bill?
Who is Bill?
Oh, yeah, I do.
Tell us who Bill is first.
Well, Bill Young,
that's my buddy.
That's his buddy, and we like aggravating Bill, and Bill likes aggravating everybody else, too, on top of that.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He's one of the best puppy starters I've ever seen in my life. He's a good old guy.
He's got a knack for weird names on dogs, too.
Yes, he has. He named them. Just you name it, he'd name them any kind of weird name that he comes up with, you know. I'm hunting with one that he has is a name Peanut Butter. Got one named Peanut Butter. he's a trip now, is all I can tell you.
Well, give us your story on him if you got one. Can you tell one on him?
Tell a story on him? Man, well, he gets lost. If you take him off, he's going to get lost. He cannot come from his house to my house over here without getting lost. The last little episode of him getting lost, I guess you would say, was in Missouri in the evening time. He was going to go. He was going to go with us. Here we go. Get up there and make a few trees, and he comes up missing. Well, it's just typical, you know. So we go on and hunt, and they say, well, where is he at? And I said, I don't know. I don't know where he is. And so I was trying to hunt a little dog for him. And so we just keep going. I said, let's just go. Let's go and finish our cast and everything. So we sort of get back, going back to the truck. And we've done gone about 3/4 of a mile, I guess, when we lost him at. Start back to the truck. And so I said, the dog is like yonder, right straight through the woods. Well, maybe he's at the truck. Well, we'll see. And we got to the truck, and he wasn't at the truck. Well, so he just quits and sits down on a rock over in Missouri, and it just so happened that my collar was on the dog, and we got to find him with a collar. Walked to him with a collar, because the dog was where he is at. I don't know how long it took us to find him. I do not know.
Well, I don't know, Bill, but it sounds like you may need to put a collar on Bill too.
Well, Bill could use a collar. He could, but that ain't the first time. That's just the last time, and it happens pretty regular. You have to keep eye on Uncle Bill. Don't go anywhere with him that you're not sure about.
Make sure you're driving. Don't let Bill drive.
Don't let Bill drive. No, Bill can't drive. No,
if he hangs around the ATFA, that's worth going to a hunt just to try to draw him. Well, Mr. Landrum, we do appreciate your time. We appreciate you telling us about Taz. Like I said, he's a dog that, you know, you now with Facebook, when you see so many pedigrees posted and people talking, and the ATFA keeps up a real good Facebook page, you know, lots of participation, and Taz's name comes up on Facebook and pedigrees, and like I said, he was mentioned in podcast earlier this week or last week, whenever it come out. So it was just, Taz was, I don't know if your ears were burning, but Taz has been one that's been on our list and was looking forward to kind of getting a story and hearing about his success and you and everything you got going on. So we do appreciate you coming on. And I know it's getting late now, so we'll let you go.
Well, I appreciate your time and appreciate y'all doing this. I hope it's done well for y'all to be able to put out. So
I just always like, I mean, you know, when this started, this podcast started kind of as a passion project of mine, and I rooked Chad into it in a way, I guess. But, you know, these are the dogs that you can't get on Facebook and just punch their name in. To me, it makes it a little hard research-wise because you got to rely on the print and conversations with other people. But to me, those are the dogs that are worth documenting. You know, Facebook will be around, or the internet will be around forever from here on out. So the dog, everything before the internet is, to me, what's worth documenting. So, yeah, I'm glad to get your story, glad to get Taz's story, and everything you gave us was good. Good episode.
Okay, well, I appreciate y'all, and wish y'all a very good night.
Yes, sir.
All right, thank you, sir.
Okay, all right.